Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Wednesday, March 29th, 2017. It's a little after 3:30 UTC as we're starting to record this. I am Sam Minter, and this week we have Yvonne Beau. Hello, Yvonne.
Yay! I'm here!
Yvonne is back. I'm alive! We are so glad to have Yvonne back. I missed you, Yvonne.
I will say that I did take a lot of pleasure in like listening to our
Ed and Bruce.
Those of you that feel, yes, Ed did a great. I tweeted this either on Facebook or tweeted. I think it was on Facebook. He was really good, very very good to listen to. Thank you so much for covering. I really did appreciate it. And Bruce, even though I may not agree with a whole bunch of stuff that Bruce says, it is good to hear from him. You know, I've got no qualms about listening to somebody that has a diverse, different point of view.
Yeah, we have to have that ideological diversity, you know?
You know, we don't have to, but you know, it's good. But it's good. Listen, if you don't listen to what the heck other people are saying, then how could you even say disagree without it if you're not even like delving and trying to understand
and I think
what is being said?
That's very important to hear those arguments, hear those point of views. And not only that, points of view, but to, you know, relate to
and
people.
And there are points of
people.
View, by the way. And by the way, there are certain things with him that I do totally agree with. I think that there's certain things that I totally agree with him. There's certain things I don't. There is. But what I will say about Bruce is that Bruce is consistent about his ideology and what he believes in, and that's one thing that I really appreciate about him. That he is not like I will say that for years on purpose I listened to Rush Limbaugh. Seriously, I listened to him to try to understand what he talked about, okay, and what his points of view were. But his points of view were solely predicated, like a lot of these other shows, ideologically to whatever the hell was against the people I'm against, not because he was ideologically pure on what he believed. And that really drove me nuts. I just could not.
Like swapping positions, between this year and last year, just because of who's on the other side at the moment, as
Correct.
Opposed to being consistent about anything.
Correct.
There's a difference, by the way, between changing your mind because facts have changed and something has convinced you, versus changing your mind because it's an opportunistic thing to support your guys and bash the other guys.
Exactly. And that's what I find that a lot of these people like Sean Hannity, frickin' Rush and a lot of these other bozos do. They're not ideologically like aligned with certain ideas. They are just against whoever the hell these other people are that they don't like.
And there are two different kinds of that too. Like there's the actual like positions on policy outcomes, and I think it's especially disturbing when you see that, but it's almost like the normal with like politicians and everybody else. If it's like something procedural, like is the filibuster good or bad, for instance, that is entirely based on are you the ones currently in charge or not?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And there's almost nobody you can find that shows some philosophical consistency there and says, for instance, you know, it doesn't matter if I'm in charge or the other guy is in charge. It's actually good to have a 60 vote threshold because it requires us to have a certain level of consensus. And if we don't, too fucking bad, we don't do that thing. You know?
Well, it's like one of these things, like the whole thing with like...
Which, by the way, isn't necessarily exactly my position, but my point is, it seems like...
No, it's to be consistent.
Nobody on these sort of procedural issues, like, is the Electoral College good or bad? Is the filibuster good or bad? Is the way districts are drawn good or bad? It seems like all of these kinds of things tend to, you know, be much more about, you know, would it benefit my side versus actually caring about the underlying fairness of whatever it is, you know?
And that seems to be the consistent theme, like, throughout right now. So, yeah, it is a very frustrating one. Like, I would say this, that if, look, if the current Republican morons, and I am calling them morons because they are complete fucking incompetent morons, there is no other way to say this,
yeah,
had come out with a bill that actually did any of the fucking bullshit that they had said they would do. Cover more people, lower premiums, lower costs. And that's what the bill did. Believe me, I would have been like, fuck yeah, let's vote. I'm for it. Let's do it. But that's not the bullshit that they did. Or any of the other shit that they're talking about. Okay? If they came out and said, you know, Trump all of a sudden tomorrow went and said, I am for, we're going to be the leader in clean energy in the world. And we're going to eliminate, we're going to reduce carbon dioxide emissions by 50% in the next 10 years. Or whatever. I'm just picking right. numbers yeah, yeah. just to say something. Yeah. But I'm like, I'm like, okay, I like that agenda. I'm going to go for that. I'm not going to, just because it's Trump proposing it, I'm not going to, you know, fuck the world, you know, out of 50% carbon dioxide reduction. Okay? Just because I don't like him. Well, so, I don't care about so that.
The other side of that is, even with the Republican plan, you know, or some modifications of it, even if there had said, there was this sort of effort to pretend that says, you know, okay, these people, yeah, these estimates from the CBO of people losing their insurance, it's bullshit, blah, 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 this won't happen, it'll be good overall. It was sort of directly countering the facts. Whereas if they'd said, at least if they'd said and been consistent, that said, look, you know, people will lose their insurance, but, and we realize that's bad. However, this is better because, you know, government will get out of this, and we think that's a fundamental good thing that, you know, and it's worth some people having less insurance because of
we're going to be out of the
because we'll be out
business.
Of this business, and in the long term we believe it's better, and there will be short term pain, but you know, in the long term we believe letting the markets in and doing this and that, and you know, we think that there will long term it'll be better for everybody. Or even say, you know, look, we recognize that this would be helpful to a bunch of people, but in order to give all these people health care, you have to violate all of these other people's rights, and we don't believe that it's okay to violate their rights to help somebody else. You know, you can be consistent about those things and say, you know, flat out, you know, yes, you would have better health care outcomes with this, but there are things more important than better health care outcomes, including not violating people's rights, not taking away, not restricting them, et cetera, et cetera. Freedom is more important than health, or whatever. You know, make that case. But they're not making that case. It seemed like they were consistently, you know, throwing up flack to try to make it seem like this would do things it almost clearly would not do.
Right.
Those of them who were even bothering. I mean, there were clearly many others who were like, yeah, this is crap. I mean, that's part of the reason it failed. And we're sort of jumping in. By the way, I haven't given the agenda. Item number one of the agenda was going to be the failure of healthcare.
That's what it is? Okay.
And then, by the way, we're also going to talk about the Supreme Court process that's going on and the future Trump agenda now that the healthcare
he's
thing
been shown to be a yeah. fucking like loser.
So we will talk about that healthcare more after the break. Were there any other introductory comments you wanted to do before we sort of got to the main topic?
I guess this entire thing about and it goes back to something I mentioned about ideology versus facts. I'm like, look, Ted Koppel said it. He said it in a fantastic way. He freaking like punched Sean Hannity in the face with it. If none of you have seen this clip, I shared it on my Twitter feed. I am B-O-U. You know, Ted Koppel did a great segment on a lot of these opinion shows, and the main thrust that he put down on it is that regardless of whether on their left on right, and I completely agree with Ted on this, is that they're more trying to not follow facts, but more push ideologies, and that's not good for our discourse. And I 100% completely agree with him. And it's what he slammed Sean Hannity with, that he's not consistent about it. I do totally believe that it is what is causing our discourse to be so shitty, that people are so susceptible to be following ideology instead of facts.
There's nothing wrong with ideology, but it should be informed by facts. It should be
exactly.
It should reflect the facts. It should be like I was saying, if you believe in a set of precepts about what government should or should not do, that's fine. But then you should figure out how to optimize your situation based on that ideology plus actual facts. Where it gets crazy is when you have people outright saying, you know, that fact is inconvenient to my ideology. So therefore, right, I'm going to pretend it's not true.
It's like, for example, this whole thing about the deficit reduction, right? Almost every time that a Democrat has been in power over the last, you know, how many times, the deficit has gone down. They've done more things and deals in order to make sure the deficit goes down.
Well, and
when you go,
and we've looked at this before, to get a complete picture, you have to look at the combination of who's in the presidency, who's in the Congress, blah, blah, blah. And
the best
combinations tend to be when the not just a Democrat in the White House, but Democrat in the White House plus Republican Congress tends to have the sort of best budgetary effects. But that's even not a consistent 100% pattern,
Look at Republicans being Republicans.
Yes.
They have been frickin' profligate, crazy spenders.
Yes.
Who have made the deficit go through the roof.
Yes.
And the Republicans keep talking about how we are for fiscal responsibility. And I'm like, fuckers, every goddamn time you've had the checkbook, you've gone bonkers on the deficit. Stop telling me that you're a fucking fiscal conservative if every time you get the checkbook, you make the deficit go through the roof. I'm sorry.
Well, and of course, where it ends up is they're fiscally conservative when it comes to certain types of spending that they just don't want to do at all. But on the other hand, certain other types of spending, oh, that's awesome, let's do more of that. And
yeah,
so it ends up like even when, you know, so you get, you know, the Trump budget, of course, you know, overall is a net increase. It cuts all kinds of things, but it increases defense to more than enough to make up for that.
I
do want to point out that we're making generalizations. There is a core group of Republicans who actually is consistent on this. And they're part of the ones that caused the problem for the Health Care Act.
No, I agree. And I'm talking about overall Republicans. OK, all right. And I agree with that. But the thing is that when you're talking about, he's cutting this and that. But when I think it's closer to 80-90% of the budget is controlled by three things, which is health care, Social Security, and defense.
Right.
OK.
Yeah.
The other shit is rounding motherfucking errors. And so you could, like I said to people, you could wipe out our discretionary budget.
Somewhere in there is the interest on the debt, too. That's also pretty
large. Right. Oh, and the interest on the debt. If you add those four, you could wipe out all discretionary programs, every fucking program outside of that, and we're still in deficit spend. So don't give me this horse shit, okay? Sorry. No. And by the way, the whole thing about reform on entitlements, especially on those big ones I mentioned, I know is a third rail for both Democrats and Republicans. I do get that. OK, I'm not going to exempt the Democrats because they've also refused to touch that piece. But, you know, don't go and tell me as a fucking Republican, oh, we're going to cut this horseshit over here. Listen, if you want to be a really true fiscal conservative, you have to sit down and at some point accept the reality that unless you touch those holy grails, there is never going to be a reduction into deficit.
Well, and the problem,
it's as simple as that.
The problem, of course, is touching those holy grails. I mean, they're third rails for a reason, which is because enough people would be hurt by reducing those things that it's political suicide to do so, and so you're in a catch 22.
I think that if you weren't, if you didn't just shove your head up your ass,
you could find a smart way to cut without pain.
Let me put it this way: were you and me be pissed off if they told you that you couldn't start collecting Social Security until 70? Push it five years. I don't know. I don't think I would give a shit.
I would probably be annoyed.
You would be annoyed, but not upset enough to throw somebody out of office.
I also wouldn't be surprised, because my entire life I've expected that by the time I got old enough to retire, that program would be gone entirely.
But that's my point. My point is that maybe you would be annoyed, but you wouldn't be throwing somebody out of office for that. I know I wouldn't.
I don't know. I honestly would have to look at the specifics and whether I felt like there was a better alternative.
The idea. We want to guarantee your benefits, but the reality is that we haven't adjusted the age forever, which is true. And you need to, since you're going to live longer, you need to start collecting benefits later. Are you okay with that? Listen, they show you the numbers. I know I'm looking at it. I've already done the numbers. I know that that's true. I'm like, listen, do it. I got to wait later. I get it. Okay?
I think you're in the minority on that.
But I think I may be in the minority, but I think that people at our age group are more willing to accept that because I think they believe that that's the expectation.
I think that's probably fair. More willing, yes. Would they?
I'm not saying I'm doing it happy, but at the same time, I understand that this is the reality that we're facing. And if I want to preserve those benefits
there's another option here, which is
raise taxes.
Yes. I mean, frankly, you could avoid raising retirement age, provide exactly the same benefits by doing an across the board tax increase to cover that difference instead.
I think you can do a combination.
And frankly, this is one thing where I think there is a difference and different people will react differently. I would rather take a tax increase now than give up the 5 years later.
But I would probably try to do a little bit of both.
Yeah, maybe. Well, and honestly, of course, the smart thing to do is break out the calculators, figure out what my personal impact would be of whatever the tax increase was.
I would try to do a little bit of both. Yeah. But my point is, the problem. We can't even get to that debate.
Right.
Is my point. This what we're talking about right now, you can't even get to.
Right.
And if you want to really cut the deficit, you could also keep the age the same
and reduce the benefits. There are all kinds of combinations you could play with.
But my point is that if you're serious about the deficit, this is the shit you got to be talking about. Not cutting the state department by 40%. That doesn't do dick.
Right. Okay. So, as I was saying, our agenda.
Let's take a break.
Well, just a second.
Not the agenda. Summarize.
I'm going to say the agenda again because you're sort of in the middle of another discussion. We're going to talk about the death of the Republican healthcare Obamacare repeal plan, Ryan Care, Trump Care, whatever you want to call it. We're going to talk about the Supreme Court nomination and the Democratic strategy to oppose it. Are they going to filibuster? Are they not? What should they do? Blah, blah, blah. And we're going to talk about what all of this means to the potential future Trump agenda. Notice there have been a lot of Russia developments in the last week, but we don't have it on the agenda because we've talked about Russia a lot, you know, and yes, there is a lot more happening. There seems like there are new developments every day, but we're going to talk about other things. We're not going to talk about Russia this time.
And it's just because we've got a whole bunch of other stuff. But
yeah, sure. And as usual, there are all kinds of other events. And so we're going to talk about all that after the break. But before the break, Yvonne, one more thing from me on the completely different kind of thing. And you have a choice. Over the last few weeks.
Okay. All right.
Actually, a little bit more than a few weeks. Yeah, over the last few weeks, I have finished a book, and I watched a movie. Which one do you want to hear about? I will save the other one for later. The book or
the book?
The book. The book? Okay. Book. Then, yeah, I was expecting you to pick movie. You surprised me.
No, I want to hear about the book. Definitely.
Okay. Let me make sure I have the right information about it. I finished the book Stiff by Mary Roach.
Okay.
It's from 2003. The book is subtitled The Curious Lives of Human Cadavers. And so if you're not familiar with Mary Roach, she's got this was one of her first books that really became popular, I guess. But there are a variety of different books on different topics that she has. And she tries to take sort of a somewhat serious topic and approach it in a light, humorous kind of tone. So aside from Stiff is the only one I've read. It's the one about dead human bodies. But then there's one called Spook about spies. There's one called Bonk about sex. There's one called Gulp about the digestive system. Grunt about humans at war. And one called Packing for Mars about space travel and going to Mars and stuff. So I haven't read any of those others. Maybe I will at some point in the future. The one I read was Stiff. And so, you know, it talks about everything from, you know, the stages of decomposition to how people in the past learned about biology through dissecting people to the logistics of harvesting organs from organ donors. You know, if you donate your body to science, what happens to it? All kinds of things like this. It goes on and on. And I'll say, you know, it was interesting. She was somewhat amusing. I think her, and of course I listened to this on audiobook, her mode of humor didn't quite strike a chord with me. For some reason, it just sort of fell flat a little bit. Like, I could recognize she was trying to be amusing, but I was just sort of like, whatever. But it was still a bunch of interesting factoids, some of which I'd heard before, some of which I had not. It was interesting. I'm not sure, like, I don't know, like, it, on the scale of 1 to 10, of 0 to 10, where 0 is avoid this at all costs and 10 is, oh my god, what a wonderful book, everybody has to go out and buy this and read this right now, I'd put this in the middle. I'd only give it like a 5 or 6, to be honest. But it was okay. It was okay. It was interesting. And if you've got a particular curiosity about what happens to dead bodies, then by all means, you know, go for it. And it may just be that her sense of humor wasn't quite hitting it with mine. Cause I've heard many other people give lots of praises to her and this book and all the other books in terms of it being funny and amusing and engaging, and it just didn't quite do it for me in that way. So anyway, that was my book that I finished.
Well, all right, well, you know you got half enjoyment.
There you go. And I will save the movie I finished for another week.
Okay, all right.
Okay, we will take a break now, and we will come back, and we will talk. I mean, we touched on it already, but we're going to get into the healthcare plan and how it crashed and burned.
Aka.
Or is it? Yeah. Yeah. Anyway,
something.
Back after this. You're listening to this podcast. Do you like it?
No!
Do you want to support the show?
No!
Well, after you have subscribed to the show, followed us on Facebook, and told all your friends they should be listening to, what else can you do?
I won't subscribe!
You can help fund our Patreon at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. Patreon is a way you can throw us a few bucks a month to help out with the expenses of the show. You know, web hosting, equipment, a little bit of advertising to promote the show, and maybe every once in a while some much-needed sedatives for Yvonne. At different contribution levels, you can get a mention on the show, our Curmudgeon's Corner postcard, or even a Curmudgeon's Corner mug fun stuff.
Not fun.
In any case, the contributions help tell us that you enjoy and appreciate the show.
I really, really hate Curmudgeon's Corner.
Are we worth $1 a month?
No!
$5 a month?
No!
Or if you are nuts about us, maybe even more.
$100 billion, even though you don't have anywhere near $1 billion.
If we're worth anything to you at all, send it our way at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner.
Alex hates, really, really hates, Curmudgeon's Corner! That's really mean, isn't it? But I hate Curmudgeon's Corner, but I really do!
Okay, we are back. So, the Republican attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare, which they have been planning for 7 years, worked out really well.
Yes, they really seem very prepared. They really had done their homework.
Well, and
they really hit all their main objectives.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that
one
of the things that I was actually impressed by, that, and I forget which Republican congressman was quoted this way, but in one of the many, many, many stories of how this played out, they quoted some Republican congressman who said flat out when asked about the 7-year history, well, we passed it, you know, 50 times or whatever, because everybody knew that it wasn't actually going to happen. It's different now that we knew it was, you know, the president was actually going to sign this and this would happen. And which, you know, you and I have
basically
mentioned,
but what we have been saying for the last 7 years.
You and I have mentioned this before, that it's all well and good to vote on the repeal when you know nothing's going to happen from it. But it's different when it could actually happen. But I was actually surprised and somewhat impressed to hear one of them actually say it flat out, openly, with
actually
their name attached.
Admit what we knew, basically, just flat out.
Yes. And look, the problem was exactly the kind of thing that we've talked about Republicans going back forever, is that they are split. They are very split. You've got the Freedom Caucus folks who are the kind of folks who, you know, we were talking about in the last segment, actually do care about the budget deficit, for instance, and will be ideologically consistent about it.
But in this case, it wasn't the budget deficit, because actually reduced the budget deficit.
It wasn't that in this case, but I mean, they were
ideologically pure on the other part of mandates.
Yes, the mandates, the government shouldn't be doing this, and you know, we promise to repeal.
Right, repeal.
And this is not a repeal, this is a modification, and you're leaving the core structures in place, excuse me, and that's not what we signed up for. And so if you have to give them anything, you have to give them the fact that they are consistent about this.
Those guys, yes, I will give them that.
But then you have, the rest of the Republicans, you've got this broad group in the middle who feel, it seems like they kind of would go along with whatever seemed like it was going to happen. and then you have a small group of moderates as well. Who are like, look, this is actually going to hurt my constituency, and I'm up, and like everybody else, all the House is up for re-election every 2 years, but they were in districts where they actually had some danger, most of, say, the Freedom Caucus folks who, you know, maybe somebody could do something in the primaries, but there's not really a big question about them losing their spots. But some of the ones who are in more contested districts are like, you got to be kidding me. And part of this was, this bill, as it was presented, all of the analysis of it showed that, you know, the various problems that Obamacare does have, none of them were actually being made better by this.
Not one.
Except cutting taxes to certain high income individuals.
Exactly. That was the only thing. I mean, they were not solving the problems about having more insurance companies in the marketplaces. They were not addressing anything about costs that were increasing. They, I mean, their premiums.
And I believe we talked about this a number of weeks ago.
Nothing.
That, you know, basically, one of the problems with how the Republicans have been attacking Obamacare all of these years is the things they have been attacking Obamacare for have not been the same things that were their actual objections to Obamacare. You know, they and so they've been, like you said, they've been attacking it with things like the premiums are going up. But the various things that they would want to do to get rid of Obamacare would not make the premiums go down.
Correct.
You know, they were attacking Obamacare for limiting choice, but the various things they were doing were not necessarily going to change that. They might in some limited areas, but they weren't. The fixes they were making were not ones where they were taking a list of, here are the five problems with Obamacare that we want to make better. Let's craft some legislation that will attack each one of those five things and make it better. That's not the approach at all. The real approach was, going back fundamentally, the problem was that this thing called Obamacare existed that Obama did, and we want to undo it and say we've changed something. And and then, you know, and they didn't like the specific,
and it seemed like the key focus that they had lately was on trying to do it on the fucking anniversary of when Obamacare was originally approved,
which that was just weird. But they also mentioned like the things that they did go after, the individual mandate, the employer mandate, the structure of the subsidies, because they didn't believe it should be need based. They thought it would be better if it would be age based. You know, and these are okay. These are specific. Like, yes, for instance, the individual mandate was something that they talked about. They talked about you shouldn't be forced to buy insurance. Okay, but you know, it does tie into all of these other things, and everything falls the hell apart if you pull that out, but leave all these other things. And so, it just was an incoherent response that, you know, was. Because you've got these various Republican factions who can't come together on something, and because the objections that people had to Obamacare weren't really the things that they were talking about that their constituents would care about. Because, and I talked to Ed about this in one of the last two shows. Fundamentally, if you are a voter, even a Republican voter, for the most part, especially the Trump voters, the less educated white working class voters, what do you care about in terms of health? You're not some ideological purist who's like, you know, I don't want government setting standards on health care. What you care about is, if I get sick, how can I get the care I need without breaking the bank?
Right.
And you don't care if that's, you know, insurance, if it's government, if it's this, if it's that, you know, those are details that, you know, you may in some high level think, you know, I'd rather not have government involved. But for the most part, the bottom line is going to be, if I get sick, can I get taken care of without going bankrupt?
Yes.
You know?
And actually,
or in an accident
years ago,
or whatever, you know.
So years ago, then I actually witnessed this in person. In the late 80s, Republicans, okay, well, Democrats in control of Congress, okay, passed what was called a catastrophic health care bill. Mm. And I remember this because actually I was in Washington, D.C. when the vote was cast to pass that. Okay, I was actually in the gallery when the vote was cast.
Okay,
to see that happen, and the Republicans did it. I'm pretty sure the year that it happened, Reagan was still president, and I think that, I'm trying to remember. This is a long time ago. I think that Bush was VP, and it was a tie vote in the Senate, and he had to cast the tie-breaking vote, which is the one thing that I saw in person. Okay? Doesn't happen very often, but okay. I actually was there.
So you
to
saw
see this
tie,
in the Senate gallery.
You saw a tie-breaking vote in person.
Yes.
That, okay. Impressive. Right. Impressive.
Okay. Okay. So and I actually saw Bush walking towards doing this. He waved high at me. Okay, Bush senior.
Aw.
Okay. Yes, I got stopped by the Secret Service. I was walking through the halls because this was I can't remember which event I was there before. And all of a sudden, Secret Service stops me, and I'm like, what? And all of a sudden, it was H.W. Bush as VP walking through. And that's why the Secret Service stopped me. So then I got to the gallery, and I saw this. This program existed for a short amount of time. For whatever reason, it didn't work very well, and it got rescinded. I can't remember exactly the reasons. I'm actually trying to look them up, but I can't remember what happened to that.
Yeah, I'm looking too, and I'm finding almost nothing from the Reagan era.
No, I'm not finding it. And there was a catastrophic health insurance bill that was passed in the 1980s. If I remember correctly, it just wasn't covering enough Americans. There was a whole bunch of restrictions to it, and it just didn't work very well, and they rescinded it later. But the whole thing about this is, my point about it is, that this has been an idea about trying to get more Americans covered so they don't go broke because of health. You know, it's been Democrats and Republicans have been at this. And the whole idea that Obama passed now was really, I'm sorry, it was Gingrich's fucking plan in the 90s. And with some modifications, you know, for currently. And only for ideological reasons, the Republicans oppose it. And I think that right now, based on what's going on and what you've seen, I don't think Americans are willing to accept having just health care taken away for people just to give a fucking big tax break to rich people. I just don't think that's happening.
So just so that I, you know, throw it out there, because of course I can't resist. There were only 7 tie-breaking votes cast by George H.W. Bush in the 1980s.
Yeah.
July 13th.
Did you find it?
No. July 13th, 1983, something about nerve gas. November 8th, 1983, something else about nerve gas. June 14th, 1984, something about MX missiles. May 1985, something on cutting the deficit.
Well, it had to be after that.
July 1986, relating to a nomination, a Mannion nomination. August 1986, yet another thing on nerve gas. And September 1987 on SDI funding for, you know, the strategic defense. That's it for George H.W. Bush.
That's it?
That's it.
Well, it wasn't quail.
So
I'm getting confused. The fact that I saw HW there with the fact that they passed the vote at the same time.
Okay.
Because there was a different tie-breaking vote that happened, and it wasn't for specifically that. Okay. Because I was trying to remember that, and I'm like, wait a minute, was he there for the tiebreaker? And I'm like, I'm remembering, no, he was there for the vote, but he wasn't there. That wasn't the tiebreaker. I think I was there for the one that was in July. That was that nonsense, like the one of the ones that you mentioned nomination. That didn't make any. Yeah, I was there for that one, but it wasn't that. It's just I happened to see them at both at the same time. But they did pass. My point is that they did. It was the saga of the Medicare catastrophic.
By the way,
coverage.
That was a nomination of someone to be a federal judge.
Okay. Medicare catastrophic. It was called the Medicare Catastrophic Coverage Act. Is that what it is? Of 1988.
Anyway, let's move on.
I found it.
Okay.
No. I found it.
Yes.
It was called the Medicare Catastrophic Coverage Act of 1988. Okay. All right. It was a supplemental premium bill paid by all individuals eligible for Medicare, and it was passed in 1988. Okay, and it was the first bill to significantly expand Medicare benefits since the program's inception, and it was meant to really cover you know, what they called catastrophic illness. So you wouldn't let me see how to describe it. A supplemental premium paid by all individuals eligible for Medicare Part A was to finance expanded coverage because of high federal budget deficit at the time, and the supplemental premium was so progressive that it would not cause hardship for pool enrollees. Although the bill passed easily with great support, just a year and a half later, the House and Senate repealed it in response to elderly people's widespread misunderstanding and criticism of the bill.
Okay.
So I remember that they passed it.
Let's fast forward 30 years now.
Didn't work, and that didn't work either. Okay, so it just seems like we never get, you know. Well, I'm going to say this: ACA,
yes,
in my opinion, did more to improve coverage. And if we got the full Medicaid expansion, for God's sake.
Well, this is actually one. I'll just throw one interesting thing. Since last Friday, there are now 5 states who had initially rejected Medicare expansion, now considering adding it.
Yes. Fuckers.
You know, because most of what's been talked about problems with Obamacare and, you know,
are gaps caused by the lack of the Medicaid expansion.
Yes. Not all of it. There are other problems, too.
Not all
too,
of it, but
just to be clear.
But that's
one of the biggest problems was the lack of Medicare expansion, which, of course, there was a big Supreme Court case about, all kinds of stuff happening there. What we may actually get is if more states actually jump on Medicare expansion,
Medicaid.
We may get some of the metrics that people had been pointing to as successes of Obamacare actually continue to move in that direction under Donald Trump, because Obamacare will actually get stronger under Trump because of additional Medicare expansion.
Right. So it's not going to explode or implode, depending on the day.
Right. There are flaws in it that will cause problems over time. There's almost no doubt about that. But they're not short-term problems. They're not things that are going to blow up in the next couple of years. They're things that will be slow burning, and there will be additional chances to
what is the difference whether it explodes or implodes?
Explode goes out, implode goes in.
Other than that, is there any?
That's the difference. An implosion is when something collapses in on itself. The explosion is when
But it's still my point is that, you know, that I guess doesn't matter. If you explode or you implode, you're still kind of getting destroyed. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, both are destructive, although explosive can also be a positive. Like if you have explosive growth in something, you know, that you're not necessarily saying that's bad.
Okay.
Whereas if you're saying, and you wouldn't say implosive growth, because that's not growth, but if you're shrinking implosively.
That doesn't sound good, yes.
Yeah, that's not
good. I guess implosive growth is bad. Explosive growth is good.
Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, if we had a point, which I'm not sure we did, but is that they were coming into a very, very tough situation to begin with in terms of how you could possibly come out of this clean. And I'm not entirely sure if they would have been better off in the long term if they'd passed this thing.
I completely agree that they probably
I think they would have gotten a short-term boost.
They long-term were fucked either way.
Yeah, I mean,
but I do agree it was probably worse if they passed it.
Yeah, and it's a short-term versus long-term thing. Like right now, by failing to do this, they've probably got a short-term hit that's really bad. They look really stupid. But frankly, by the time we get to election year 2018, people will probably have mostly forgotten. Other things will have happened. Whereas if they had passed it, there would have been a big positive boost where everybody was like, rah, rah, look, they passed healthcare reform. And then by the time we get to 2018, when we get a whole bunch of people losing their insurance, then people would be like, wait, this kind of sucks. Right at election time.
I think that this is, they're fucked either way. It's just a different I just think it was different. And how you're able, what you're able to spin from this disaster. Okay, because one disaster is we fucked you. We took away your health care and we gave a tax cut to the rich.
Now,
and Yvonne, how does that spin Yvonne, to your voters?
They didn't take away their health care. They increased their ability to choose not to have health care.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Whatever. Okay. Sure. All right. Okay. That. Yes. Okay. So that's what option A. Option B is that we look like a bunch of incompetent idiots because we spent 7 years disparaging this bill, and the moment that we got into authority to do anything about it, we just basically show you that we had never had were serious about this and had no actual concept of what we really wanted to do in order to fix this problem. So which was worse? The callous, heartless jerk-offs or incompetent idiots?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the...
I don't know. What do you think sells better to the electorate?
Well, like I said, I think that the actually having passed the bill would have the negative effects starting to hit right around election time. So I think that would have been worse. But the caveat of that, which gets into our next subject, which I think we should do next and SCOTUS last, is that it partially depends on what they do next. And are they able to pivot? There's that word again. Pivot. It's coming any day. Any day now.
Oh, yes, any day. Yes, any day.
Are they able to pivot to actually having successes on other things? Or is this a preview of what's to come? If this is a preview of what's to come, and we get the Republicans trying and failing over and over and over again over the next year and a half to get various things done, then I think this is an utter disaster for them.
So it's either heartless or incompetence, or it could be a combination of heartless and incompetence, which really sounds like really shitty to me. But you know what? Let's take a break.
Other thing I wanted to say on healthcare before we take that break, yes, is that first of all, everybody said, okay, I guess we have to live with Obamacare. But there's some question on, you know, Trump's, let's save the except for the next segment. But what I was going to mention is Trump basically saying, and then Obamacare is going to explode, implode. He can't get that straight either. and then you'll see. And then you'll come wanting a deal, and then you'll want health care. which, you know, first of all, whether he likes the law or not, it's actually his responsibility to try to make it work as best as he can. Right. And if instead he's actively trying to sabotage it, there's a question of, first, what exactly are the things that he can do to make it work less well over the next couple years? And there's a lot of leeway that him and his
sabotage a website, I guess.
Well, yeah, but again, I mean, already, and they're apparently getting investigated for this. You know, for the last open enrollment period, they pulled the ads in the last week or so of open enrollment. And
they
now,
tried to. In the end, they didn't wind up. But if I remember correctly,
they tried to. I think they pulled them for a little while and then put them back. But anyway, there's now an internal investigation going on about whether that was legal for them to have done that. You know, but there are other things that they can potentially do within the existing framework, some of which were announced, you know, with his executive order at the very beginning of his presidency, in terms of things like, you know, actively issuing guidelines to not actually enforce the individual mandate, you know, things like that. And so we'll see. But I think if Trump is actively trying to sabotage it from within, he can cause more damage. I'm not sure that he can do enough to actually force it into having that death spiral within the next 2 to 4 years. But you never know. I mean, if you've got if you've got an administration actively trying to undermine its own programs, there's a lot of stuff you can potentially do.
Yeah, there could be.
Okay, let's take a break, and we will come back with where does the Trump agenda go from here? Where does the Republican agenda go from here? How is it affected by the healthcare thing? And what are their options? And, you know, do the Democrats play along? We will be back right after this.
Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are four ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks, and we look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, we are back. So, they're going to move right on to tax reform, right? Is that the plan now? Tax reform?
This is the most moronic thing I have ever heard in the history of mankind. Look, I mean, when I was at our alma mater, Carnegie Mellon, there was a book I read called, let's see, here it is, Showdown on Gucci Gulch. Okay,
I vaguely remember this. I think we had to read it for a class.
Yes, we did. Okay, that book was about the ridiculous negotiations that took around the 1986 tax reform, which is the last time that we've really had a big tax reform in this country. Okay. And if you read how difficult that was, and that was in an environment where compromise was not a dirty word, okay, yet, I don't see how in God's name this gang of idiots can pull together tax reform or anything else for that matter.
So now you mentioned that tax reform is tricky, and you have the same sort of divide between, you know, the Freedom Caucus and the moderates and whatever. But I remember you mentioned this on Twitter or Facebook or somewhere, and I countered, okay, maybe you're right for full-fledged reform, but don't you think the Republicans could get it together for something as simple as, let's just cut all the taxes by 10% across the board and leave it
no,
there?
No, because the Freedom Caucus, their whole thing has been the deficit. And so if you're going to just do an across-the-board tax cut like that and not do anything to offset to the deficit, they're going to block it.
But Yvonne, the tax cut will provide a stimulus that will cause growth, that will cause you to actually get more income from the taxes, right? Laffer curve.
I don't think that I truly believe that those guys, if they believed that, then they would have done a whole bunch of other things.
Like?
I just no, like even the whole AHCA thing. And they opposed it because they didn't truly believe that that was the case. So I don't see that that they will you're going to have that they would sign up for that kind of a tax cut across the board that is just going to be revenue negative, especially if the CBO says that it is revenue negative, and I don't see how it wouldn't be. I mean, if you go like a 10% tax cut across the board, I mean, the only way to do a tax reform that makes any sense involves raising taxes for certain groups and cutting taxes for others and getting to a position where at least you're revenue neutral, but it like rebalances the pie in some way of where you get the money. And if you're not willing to do any trade-offs and it's all just cuts, then it's going to wind up exploding the deficit even further.
So some of the standard favorites on the right over the years in terms of tax reform are things like, let's go for a simple flat tax. You don't think they could all get behind that?
No. No. There won't be enough people because the simple flat tax usually, well, number one, it's going to be super regressive.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah.
And so you're going to get a lot of moderates that are going to say, hell no. Okay.
Yeah.
So that kills the moderates just right off the bat. Okay. That you would impose such a regressive tax. I just don't see how. I start off with those guys. I mean, just that. It's just every one of these is just, you know, who, I mean, it's like the same problem. When they were trying to do AHCA, one of the problems is like, we're going to give these guys this piece. Well, when they did that, they pissed off the moderates.
Right.
Right. And if they gave what the moderates wanted, then they pissed off the other guys. It's the same fucking thing with this thing. The thing is that there, this code, if you think like healthcare was complicated, you know, our tax code, I mean, are you kidding? It's like 10 times worse. So I just don't understand.
How about something getting rid of certain loopholes or something like that? I mean, that tends not to be the Republican approach, but.
Okay, so they got rid of a couple of loopholes, but I guess in the end it doesn't have a really meaningful impact for anybody. I mean,
of course, getting rid of loopholes ends up raising somebody's taxes, which Republicans tend not to like.
Of course. I mean, think about, I heard some people bantering around like eliminating like the mortgage tax deduction or limiting it in some additional way or whatever. I'm like, you know, how many fucking people is that piss off? Starting with
Death tax, getting rid of the death tax. That's one of the things they talk about all the time.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm sure like Trump will sign that. He's all for that shit.
Well, yeah, it probably directly affects him. He's one of the few that it does directly affect. Right. Or I guess it would affect his kids.
Yes.
I don't know. I think you're overall, you're probably right. But there are differences between the dynamics for taxes and the dynamics for healthcare. But
it is different. But the problem is that it's just you have so many more groups that are involved in this. Because then you go beyond just like in healthcare, it's like older people, younger, whatever. Man, you've got so many industries, whether it's the tech industry or the oil industry or the other industry that has whatever specific tax break they got, or the real estate industry or the other, or the investment or Wall Street or the others. There's so many groups, okay, that the tax laws impact, okay, and that have a lot of money and pull that, you know, oh, well, we're going to increase taxes to the investment bankers. Well, or we're going to cut them. I mean, my God. Okay, whatever. You got to raise the revenue from somewhere else if you want to maintain this thing revenue neutral, right?
Well, and
at least.
Yeah, and all of these things have this, the dynamic that is the same with healthcare is that improving things for the traditional Republican constituency of sort of the business and owner class is going to piss off the Trump Republicans.
Correct.
Who are definitely not the business owner class. They're the screw the establishment type.
Correct.
And they're looking at, you know, we keep talking about this Midwestern white working class who's been left behind and screwed and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, doing something to reduce capital gains, for instance, is not going to do jack shit for those people.
Right.
At least not in a way that they directly perceive. It's going to be perceived as yet another giveaway to the fat cats.
No, agreed.
So, okay. So beyond taxes.
All right. So let's talk about taxes. What about, okay, here's the other thing, Trump agenda. Yes. Infrastructure.
Yes, infrastructure.
Come on. I mean, this is another deficit exploding bomb. Now, look, if he...
Although that depends, wait, that depends on some things as well too, because you know when everybody thinks when somebody says infrastructure plan, the immediate thing that comes to mind is direct federal spending. We're going to build some damn bridges. We're going to fix some roads. We're going to.
He threw out $1 trillion. Well,
right, but when you looked at the plan that he actually put out earlier, and you know, of course, these things are high level hand wavy things, but it wasn't actually direct federal spending on jack shit. It was tax incentives for other people to build stuff.
Yeah. Well, here's a problem with that. Okay, if he wants to pass something like that right now, if he's just doing something that's going to blow up the deficit, I mean, I don't see how he gets this entire coalition to go behind us anyway. And that certainly isn't putting honey in the pot for the Democrats. They're right. Not going to vote for that.
Yeah. Well, and
this is the whole thing that I'm saying about, you know, we're talking about this agenda moving forward. And now he's all pissed off at the Freedom Caucus, right? Because they blocked AHCA.
Yes.
And then he keeps saying that we're going to reach out to Democrats. Reach out with what?
There was a phase in between where he was blaming the Democrats. The reason that this didn't happen is because the Democrats wouldn't go along with it.
Right. Then he changed his mind and then he blamed the Republicans. Right. Yeah. So but my point is, so
let's talk about reaching out to the Democrats. Yes. It ties into some of this stuff because on health care, on tax reform, on this, if President Trump decided to be like, screw those damn conservatives, I don't give a shit about them anymore. Let me propose some things that do have, you know, cross-party appeal. Do you think he actually could get Democrats to go along? Like, let's say on healthcare.
If he were to propose something that they would love, right. But the thing is that I don't see how he would.
Well, because that's the thing. I mean, the Republicans have responded to his, you know, saying, oh, maybe we have to work with the Democrats by saying, well, look, yeah, sure. If he wants to do what we want.
Right. I mean, that's my point. I'm like, oh, let me reach out to the Democrats. Oh, let me reach out to the Democrats to get them to cut health insurance for 24 million people.
No, the fundamental thing is working with the Democrats involves some fairly significant policy concessions that say, okay, we're going to do some Democratic agenda items. And maybe we'll horse trade and we'll still get a couple of Republican items, but we're going to give the Democrats some of what they want.
Right.
And of course, the whole Trump as deal maker, that's the kind of thing he was kind of advertising that he could do. But at this point, what is the incentive for the unless Trump comes straight out and says, like, I'm now for single payer health care. Let's go.
Or no. Or I am like for free university tuition for all adults. Right. Or some shit like that. What's the incentive?
Otherwise, what they see is Trump getting increasingly desperate, failing, unable to accomplish anything. They want to let that continue.
Why not?
You know, and so there's no Democratic incentive to sort of cross the aisle to save Donald Trump. And one thing that, I mean, Republicans identified correctly during the Obama years is that if they had gone along with Obama and said, hey, yeah, you're right, this is a very Republican plan. Let's pass this with a bipartisan majority. We all like this. Let's go. Then who would have gotten the credit for that? Not them. Obama would have.
That's true.
You know,
that is very true.
And so they correctly identified that and said, well, we're not going to help Obama with anything. And I think the one thing that the Democrats have come around to is, you know, it worked for the Republicans. That's what we're going to do now. We're not going to help Trump with a damn fucking thing.
But at the same time,
unless he comes up and says, here's the Democratic platform on a plate, vote for it. Okay. Right. The Democrats would do that. But, you know, aside from that, there's no reason for them to go there.
I agree with you on that. I mean, I think it would be stupid, obviously, that if Trump proposed something that was like dear and so important to your heart to just say no. I mean, if Trump came in with a plan to, like I said, to cut carbon dioxide emissions by 50%, and we're all for it, I'm like, here's the problem with like Trump, okay?
Yes.
And it goes back to everybody elected this guy, the people that voted for him, they kept saying that they did it because he's a deal maker.
Yeah.
Because I make deals. I make deals. But look, the reality about Trump, as I've seen and dug deeper into how his mentality and how he works, he never makes deals with equals. Okay? He makes deals with weaker partners that he's got something to lord over and fuck over. Okay?
Yeah.
He doesn't make a deal that is mutually beneficial.
And he's run into the
deal where the other people are fucked.
Yeah, and he's run into the buzzsaw of Congress where they're not willing to just sort of lay down for that.
Exactly. And that's why I don't see how he makes any deals, because he is used to getting his way by being the bully in the deal and fucking over the other guy.
And the other thing, you know, I mentioned there were dozens and dozens of descriptions of how all of this failure went down. But one of them, and I forget which one, laid out a meeting that he was having with the Freedom Caucus. And it was one of several he had. But, you know, they started to talk about, you know, their concerns and their objections, and they were talking about, you know, specific items in the deal and this part or that part and how that was objectionable for this. And he responded with, fuck all this little shit. Let's talk about the big picture. And then when he talked about the big picture, he was like, we promised that we would do something, and if we don't, you guys will not get elected again. You know,
right. And that was it.
And whereas, you know, Donald, the little shit is what matters.
Right.
I mean, it's if you're actually evaluating a bill from the point of view of will it be good or bad, you know, whether it be for healthcare in general or just as compared to my ideological agenda, either way, you're evaluating the specifics of the bill and does it do what I want it to do? And he basically was like, screw that. That doesn't matter. Just do it because we said we were going to do it for me. And
right.
And the
freedom, and they were like, no.
Yeah, they were like, fuck this shit.
You're killing us.
Yeah. I mean, the details matter. And as long as Donald Trump isn't
he did not look at any detail of this bill whatsoever.
Numerous people, and I'm talking Republicans, In the commentary about this, they were like, we don't believe he even knows what's in the bill.
No, he had no clue.
Yeah, because that's just not what he does. It's not what he cares about. It's not what. Now, I heard some people say, well, you know, because of his background, he'll know more about the taxes.
Whatever.
You know, I don't know. Maybe he'll know a little bit more, but he is not a detail person. He just isn't. And I think
he's a detail person about certain things, not about this shit. Okay. And I don't think he cares. Okay. About healthcare. I don't think one iota. And so to him, the details didn't matter.
Right.
If it was the gold color of the columns at his fucking like building, then he would have cared.
Does he care about taxes?
I think he cares about taxes if they impact him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he gives a shit about anything else. So, for example, like energy tax breaks or like issues with like repatriation of profits from other countries, or like whether you're being taxed on your income, you know, in the U.S. or your like global income or any of those fucking details. He couldn't give a flying fuck.
Right. And in these cases, the making a deal is about trade-offs between the details.
You know, it's, because that is it's the only way to make a deal. You have to really understand the details to see
and say,
which
you know,
details
okay.
you're willing to give over here in order to go over there.
Yes, exactly. Totally. You have to be able to say, you know, this thing really matters to you. I will let you have that if you let me have this.
Correct.
You know?
Right. And just showing up and like Steve Bannon and like telling them, this is the best deal you have. Take it or leave it. I'm like, you know, they're going to go and like just give them a double barrel salute of fingers and just going to tell, fine.
Apparently, there was one congressman who actually just got up and left in one of those meetings.
There was another one that told, and there was another one that my understanding told, what was it that he told him? It's like, the last time somebody told me that I had to do something is like my daddy when I was 18 years old. And I didn't hear him. I didn't listen to him either.
Yep. I remember that quote.
Yeah, you know, yeah. If this is their negotiating strategy that they keep going forward with, I don't see how they get anywhere to do jack shit.
Yeah, and you know, in terms of courting the Democrats, you know...
I just finished saying that, I just have to laugh. Sorry.
Aside from all of...
Come on, man!
Aside from all of we were talking about before in terms of basically having to give the Democrats their whole agenda, if it's anything less than that, you've also got the dynamic that the activist Democratic base is yelling up and down, saying that their only evaluation for how they will vote for Democrats in the future is based on how well they oppose
Trump. And I'm not going to argue with them at all about this. I'm with them on that, because unless what they're getting, unless, for example, what you're getting from him is a complete capitulation on a very important agenda item. If you're telling me that tomorrow that we're going to get health care for everybody, and if we go along with Trump on something, hell, listen, I'm sorry. They could get pissed off all you want because we went with Trump on something, but I'm going with health care for everybody.
Well, but the key for that also is, you know, it can't just be a promise, because we can't believe a damn thing out of his mouth.
No. I'm saying a bill. That he's going to sign a bill.
I hear you, but my point is just anything short of that kind of complete capitulation, any Democrat,
it's a waste of time.
Any Democrat who crossed the aisle to help the Republicans get something passed,
they would be vilified and for good reason at this point.
I mean, the base would not have it, and maybe somebody like Joe Manchin in West Virginia could get away with it, but nobody else could.
Yeah, I mean, and I just think it's just a reflection of the level of frustration people have with everything. And look, you talk about, you know, some people were talking about today. I was shocked that Jim Cramer on CNBC was saying that he thinks Trump still has some political capital. Dude, when your approval ratings as job performance ratings are in the shitter where they are like right now, but basically you are the worst approved ever president. Around 60 days into being president, and you have the worst approval rating ever for such a president. What capital do you have? You got nothing.
Well, and also, you know, you've just shown through the health care debate so far that the Republicans can go against you and have no consequences for it. The Democrats go against you and it's positive for them. So, So you know, his whole threat, you know, he has proven he has no way to keep the congressional Republicans in line.
Exactly. And so that's why I'm like, when people say that he has political capital, I have to laugh. He's got nothing. I mean, I can see.
Unless you start seeing things happen, like, you know, members of the Freedom Caucus suddenly losing privileges in the House, and you know, their polls going down or something like that. You got nothing there, and he would have to build something back up from here, and this tying into what we've talked about before about his inability to construct his administration, because it's not like he's got people surrounding him who are doing this stuff.
No, he's got nothing.
You know, because
he's got none of that.
You know, because you could get away with a president who doesn't sweat the details if he has people around him who do. I mean, we had Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was in that mold. He didn't give a shit about the details. Although, he had more conception of the details than Trump did. I think he gave more of a shit
for the details than Trump did. Yes. Trump does.
But he clearly also was not a detail person, but he surrounded himself with people who were. He wasn't a policy
wonk. Right. Yeah.
But he surrounded himself with people who knew that stuff backwards and forwards and knew what to do. Trump has surrounded himself with morons.
Or maybe not, you know, I'm not going to say like morons maybe completely, but definitely people who are ineffectual in their capacity to work with a Congress to craft something that could turn an idea into a policy that turns into law.
Yeah. Well, and also just even on the administrative side, we've got very little evidence of people who are able to drive an agenda forward within the executive branch either, except for the places where the agenda itself is don't do anything. Because it's fairly easy to make you not do anything, you know, by, you know, putting people in place who don't believe in doing anything, not giving guidance to the underlings, all the kind of stuff that they are doing. So if their goal, for instance, is to have the State Department not do anything so that Jared Kushner can run forward policy, well, you know, you have the State Department do nothing. That they seem like they can figure out how to do.
I mean, I would like to get a job like that for the next 8 years. Can I get paid for just doing absolutely nothing? You know.
Well, I mean, of course, the flip side is that's why they're doing the, you know, 30% cut. We don't need all those people,
right?
Because we're not going to use the State Department anyway. You know.
Right.
So it's definitely though. We at the very beginning of this, we were like, Berlusconi?
Well, I think that if I remember correctly, and you can go back, but I think I'm pretty sure I said that, look, I was not as worried about Trump, and because I just expected that the incompetence was going to shine through and like not allow him to drive any of this shitty agenda.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. My fear with Trump was never that he would be effective enacting a conservative agenda. Like that would be my fear with Pence or somebody like that.
Right.
My fear with Trump was the systematic destruction of important American institutions. And he's being actually quite effective at that.
I don't know. You know, look, I think our institutions are more resilient than that. Even like with the State Department and all those organizations, even with the stuff that he's doing. I do believe that there is an impact, obviously.
Well, and I'm not necessarily talking.
But I'm thinking 20, 30 years down the line.
What I'm talking about is not necessarily the institution of the State Department. I'm thinking more like, you know, people's ability to have faith that, you know, their government is fundamentally competent at doing such things. And, you know, obviously lots of people have lost that faith a long time ago. But, you know, the faith that the courts are going to do the right thing, that when we have an election, it produces results we expect, that there is a such thing as truth, you know.
Listen, everybody is like was concerned about the courts. Oh, he's going to pack the courts. Listen, there's about a hundred some odd appointments, I think was a number that's out there, out of thousands of like federal judges. Federal judges are lifetime appointments, and they're like that on purpose because you want continuity. Like one president can't like one presidency can't define the federal bench, okay, and how it really performs over the over our lives, okay. You know, it has some influence, but it doesn't it doesn't drive that. So I really truly believe that that, you know, while he will have an impact, obviously, that it's by the way that it was designed, any presidency doesn't get to like alter it like that significantly. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
on the other hand, there's this other thing that I'm going to give you a positive flip side that I've already seen. Like right now, look, the fact that we've got Trump apparently has scared a whole bunch of Europeans shitless. Okay, about a whole bunch of these right wing like demagogues who they thought looked cool. Okay. And in a number of elections that have happened recently in the Netherlands and in Germany, all of a sudden people finally like got scared straight and went and said, oh, shit, maybe we shouldn't be voting for these whack jobs. OK. Mm. And all of a sudden they are not winning. So maybe in the end, you know, our suffering in the short term may be something that is beneficial to the planet over the longer term.
Maybe. But as I said during the campaign, before Trump even became president, I said, even if he loses, he's already done significant damage just because of the way he ran, just because of the way that he showed.
I think people that you could won't stand it. Things, what, I think that, you know what the thing is, that if he comes off as a complete fucking buffoon and
you
a loser,
some
the
that
way
damage?
That he is. Oh, no, of course. Because people will never vote for an asshole like this again. I mean, I think that what he is proving right now with how his approvals are plunging is the fact that people are realizing, oh, my fucking God, what idiots are we?
Yeah. Well, and although, as I pointed out in that blog post a little while ago, job approval is falling, but favorability is still holding steady. But what that means is people are saying, yeah, he's doing a bad job, but I still like him. And I think part of that is the psychological block against admitting that you made a mistake.
Yes, but what that means is that you're not as if you don't approve of him, that means you're not as disposed for the next person.
Yeah.
That comes along like him to vote for a guy like
that.
You
may still like him just fine, but that doesn't mean you'd vote for him again.
Yes.
But I'll vote
for somebody like him again.
Well, and I think one of the important things, and I'm anxious to start seeing polls to see if anybody, how a possible primary challenger for him in 2020 would do. Because I think the question is not, if you put Trump against Clinton again, I think most people would dig in and vote the same way they did. Now, it was so close. Just a few people changing their minds would be enough to change the outcome.
You didn't really need that much of a change.
No. You need a tiny change to change the outcome. But if you reran the Republican primaries, I'm wondering if you would have a change.
Like, good knows.
You know, and I don't know. I mean, you still got, like, there was a resounding rejection of people like Bush and Rubio. So I don't know, but I don't
know. I don't know. I'm like, listen, the Republicans, honestly, listen, the Republicans are right now, like I said, just as divided as before. So
would they hurry up and just break up? You know,
that would be nice.
I mean, it's like if we have this continuing dynamic, it's almost as if winning with Trump can potentially be a long term negative to the Republicans. You know, if Trump is a failure, if the Republicans in Congress can't get their act together to support anything, and look, it's really early. You know, there is time for them to get their act together. Let's be honest.
Yes.
But if they continue like this, then they hit the next couple of election cycles just as divided as they are now. Where does that go? Like, because effectively, and, you know, even going back long before this presidential election cycle, we've said the reality is, you know, the way that the American Congress works forces it into two parties. But each of the parties, both the Republicans and Democrats, are really a coalition of very diverse interests that are fraying at the edges right now. And
yeah.
So the Freedom Caucus maybe should be its own damn party. You know? And the Bernie-crats probably should be their own party, too.
Maybe.
And so, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
Look,
I don't see that happening.
Listen, for all that I can say about the Bernie-crats, listen, I agree with a lot of things that a lot of the Bernie-crats want. I just may not agree with certain of their tactics or how they want to approach it. But I will say that I think that, the differences between what Democrats want and what when you take the Freedom Caucus and what the rest of the Republicans want, those are far stark. I think that I do truly believe that in the short to medium range, I don't see how the Republicans don't get like really clobbered in 2018. I just don't see how. I don't see how this is improving.
Here's how I see how. I mean, most districts on both the Republican and Democrat side are safe. And so there's only
we've always said that.
No. But that's why.
Listen, I'm sorry, but we've said that. And every time it happens, it's just like it happened. Listen, the Democrats had a majority in like 2008. Yeah, when they lost it.
There is a wave, you can have a 40-point move, a 40-seat.
And I do believe that this is the shit that's been going on right now with the numbers that you're looking at are enough for a wave.
Yeah, I think, look, if they continue to fail miserably, you may be right.
I truly believe that based on my previous assessment of how these guys have not been able to pass any bills even before this. This is like 7 years of complete lack of passing any bills. What is going to improve in the next 18 months? Seriously.
Well, but one question is also how much of the decision making that voters are going to be going to make are going to specifically hinge around, hey, Congress didn't do jack, as compared to a more general, you know, how does my life happen to be going in 2018? Is the economy good? Is the economy bad?
Look, they made a ton of promises.
Yes, they did.
And you know what? It's really great campaign fodder to show all the shit that you promised that you didn't do.
Right.
It's very simple. It's not that hard.
Yep.
And that works better, you know, like we were talking about the last campaign about how people were doing character attacks against Trump about this and that, blah, 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 and how it probably would have played a lot better to go to a lot of Trump country and show them, you know what, guys, you got health care. You know that thing that they call Kentucky, whatever, K-Connect?
Yeah.
You know, that's Obamacare. You understand that, right? If we had taken probably the fucking time.
Because nobody
to explain
did.
It,
yes.
Right. If we had taken the fucking time to explain that, you know what? I'm not saying that we got a majority of them, but probably enough votes to knock this election to the other side.
Well, yeah. And again, it was so close. Any minor change would have flipped.
But listen, Bill Clinton, whatever you think of Bill, I do trust his political instincts. And he said this a year ago, and I'm sorry, but the numbers proved him out to be totally right. He went to the meetings of the campaign. He said, guys, you're ignoring these people. You're crazy. You can't keep doing this. I know that you think that you've got the numbers and all the other end, but you're ignoring these people. This can't work. And they said, nah, you're wrong.
Right. Okay, with that, let's end this segment. We'll take a break. We will come back and talk specifically about the Supreme Court for a little bit and then wrap this show up. Back after this. Bring me the elephant on the stick.
Thank you for using your conference account information.
Okay, we are back.
Well, now that I'm closing in on hour, let's see, what hour am I?
Have you been up 24 hours yet?
I'm on hour 22.
Excellent.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll make this quick. About, or yes. Even better, you could fall asleep during the segment like you did last year sometime.
I've done that before. Yes. Okay, I'll try not to today, folks. Okay, sorry about that. So, I'm trying to do the show at like very odd hours.
Yeah, go like, search I, back I through the episodes. There's a really good one. It's like half the episode is Yvonne just snoring while I talk.
I'm sorry. I was trying very hard. So, those days again.
So anyway, you know, they've scheduled the Supreme Court vote. The main question at this point seems to be, will the Democrats actually try to filibuster this thing and force the Republicans to use the nuclear option to get this guy in? Or
which option?
The nuclear. There you go. Happier?
Thank you.
Nuclear. Nuclear. you know, to get Gorsuch in. Gorsuch, right? That's how you say his name? Gorsuch?
Gorsuch. As I can tell, yes.
Or will they just allow a straight up and down vote, which, you know, even if all the Democrats vote against, he gets in. If they try to stick to 60, then the question is, do the Republicans have the vote to actually change the rule? Most of what I've seen says they probably do. But lately, within the last few days, I've heard that there are enough Republican senators who just fundamentally believe in the existence of the filibuster that it might actually be a close thing whether or not they could actually do that.
I would say that right now, based on the environment, if the R's really want to get Gorsuch in, they're going to have to do it, you know, using the nuclear option.
I mean, here's the logic that the Democrats have had, and there have been a few articles about this, and the Democratic caucus in the Senate seems to not have entirely made up their minds on this issue at this point, is that this is a conservative replacing a conservative. It's not the hill to die on. So let them have this guy. We just returned to the same status quo we had when we had Scalia. And the place to try to actually make a stand is if they tried to replace a liberal justice with a conservative justice. That until then, you don't have to force the filibuster. You don't have to force the rules change. You just deal with it. Let them have it. You know, this is not the one to fight.
I just think that reasoning is stupid. I mean, because you're just delaying the fight. You are, because the Republicans, even if it's a liberal, they will try to do the same damn thing. And so the question is whether they're going to hold back now.
Is the gamble that none of the liberal justices are going to retire or die before we get rid of Trump?
I guess, at this point.
Because then they're gambling that, you know, we just hold on a little bit longer and we won't have to deal with this because we'll have a Democratic president again. Now, some of those justices are pretty old, you know.
Well, yeah.
But
you know, hey, maybe, you know, like I said, listen, I keep gambling and I think that I'm not totally wrong on this, that I think that he's going to have a heart attack.
Well, Pence is not going to get it. Pence is not going to give a Supreme Court justice nominee that the Democrats like any better.
Well, that's
so
true.
So what we're really talking
maybe they'll
about
have a double heart attack.
What we're really talking well, so
we
Ryan.
Got Ryan.
Yeah,
he's a fuck. Well, but he's
or
an
Orrin
idiot.
Hatch,
go down the chain.
There's nobody the Democrats would be happy with. Yes.
Here, no. Listen, we take the House back in 2 years.
Yeah.
Trump and Pence get into a plane crash.
God. Yes, go ahead.
And then we got, Pelosi. I don't know, Speaker, whoever.
Yeah. President Pelosi. Yeah, there you go. That's That's the plan, Yvonne.
You like my plan?
So look here. The real scenario is you'd be waiting a long time. So there was talk of making a deal where you let this guy through if he promises not to use the nuclear option on the next one. But you know who's going to believe that? I mean, look, I've said before publicly, on this show and on Twitter, the filibuster is done. It's only a matter of time. Now that we've proven conclusively that you can get rid of it by a simple rules change, then all it takes is you just wait until the time where there is an issue or a nomination that is important enough for the majority party and the filibuster is gone. You know, so
I think my
point is just I think it's only a matter of time, so it might as well be
important enough or not.
Because
right now you've got a court that's a 4-4 court, and somebody said, they said, well, it seems to be working fine.
Yeah. Well, and this is the thing too. Like to me, it seems like it's inevitable. The Democrats might as well do it now, and you know. If they force the Republicans to get rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees, then hey, that's a benefit the next time the Democrats have the presidency and the Senate,
right?
And yep. And so you just deal with it. And hey, frankly, you know, majority rules. You win the election, you get to do what you want. Let it be. But on the flip side, if they hold the filibuster and the Republicans don't muster the votes they need to do it, then they get a big fucking win out of it. So, you know, what the hell? Go for it. You know, call the Republicans bluff on it. Don't be afraid of this.
I do totally agree. I don't think the Democrats have anything to lose on this, like, right now.
Yeah, I mean, the Republicans are trying to make a case that the Democrats look petulant and that, you know, there's, you know, they're just sore losers and blah, blah, blah. Whatever.
I know that my strategy is trying to maintain a liberal like a judge. I mean, I'm like, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Weekend at Bernie's. You know, look, all I'm trying to do, I'll get a couple now, of them.
Now,
yeah, but just you know,
the one thing you'll notice,
we'll trot around the person until the Democrat gets it off.
There you go.
That's it.
Now, the one thing you'll notice that has not been mentioned in this discussion whatsoever is the traditional: is the person qualified? The president has the right to nominate who they are, and you know, Senate nominations.
Well, that went out the window when the Republicans refused to do hearings on Garland.
Yeah, that's the thing. And I think I'd made the case on a previous show that it had been deteriorating for a while anyway, going back a couple decades. Like I saw somebody do an analysis where they showed the margins. How many people voted for Supreme Court nominees, and when you go back to the 80s, they were mostly 95, 98 votes in favor of most nominees, and then that's slowly been declining from the 90s to the 80s to the 70s to the 60s, and now it's party line votes, and okay, that's the new reality, you know. And I think
I don't like it, but you know, I think that
it used to be, as long as the person was competent, even if they ideologically disagreed with you, you would vote for them because you would say, you know, the president has the right to nominate who they want.
No,
and that's gone.
But when you're picking people, when you seem to be picking people more for ideology than for competence.
Oh well, come on, that's been true going back like 100 years.
I think that it's got. I know. And I mean, I'm going back. I mean, I know that if I go back, let's say, my God, the bright shining example of that is fucking Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
For God's sakes. My God. I mean, you know, the man was obviously 100% selected for that. But at the same time, I just think that, we've had this polarization that has happened. And it just is what it is at this point.
So, prediction time. Do you think the Democrats will try to do a filibuster?
Yes.
I think they will too. Do you think they will succeed in actually holding the number of votes they need for that filibuster, or will they be Democratic defections that break it?
No, I think they will hold. I think they will hold.
I think they will hold it, too. Will the Republicans then respond by killing the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees?
I give 50-50 right now at this point.
So
I give 50-50.
So you think there's a 50% chance that therefore that Gorsuch will not get on the Supreme Court?
Correct.
Huh. I wouldn't give it that high. I think that the Republicans...
You think that they're automatically going to go nuclear?
I think I think the biggest weak point in this chain is actually the Democrats holding the filibuster. I think the Democrats will
if they hold a filibuster, okay, what do you give the odds?
Well, no, what I mean is the Democrats will try to do the filibuster. Let me go through the steps. I think the Democrats will try to do the filibuster. Steps. I think there is probably an 80% chance they will be successful at that filibuster and a 20% chance that there will be Democratic defections that keep them from doing that. For instance, Manchin from West Virginia has already announced he will not support a filibuster.
Okay.
So you only need a couple more of those to not have 60 votes.
Let's be clear, you need 8.
Not have the 100 minus 60, whatever. Yes.
Yeah, you need 8. Okay.
You got
48.
You need 8.
Yeah, you need 8 defections. Yeah, right. One doesn't do it. You need 8.
You need more.
You need a lot more.
Let's assume that the Democrats are able to successfully filibuster. I think there's probably still an 80% chance that the Republicans would kill the filibuster for Supreme Court.
You're at 80. I'm at 50. Okay. Well, yeah. we're both. I mean, if you take our odds, I mean, they're pretty high that they're going to get this done. I mean, we're estimating north of a 50% chance that, you know, that he will get it.
Yeah. I think you'd be stupid to bet that Trump will not get his Supreme Court nominee. I think he will get his Supreme Court nominee. There are some interesting scenarios where he doesn't, but I think they're long shots.
I'm not going to call a long shot. Like, we just talked between 50 and 80%, which if we average it out just stupidly is like, what the hell? Oh, God.
Oh, let's see.
80, let's just put it 65%. Okay, all right.
Let's just put it this way: the odds.
I mean, that's still 35%, leaving it no.
Yeah, the odds of Gorsuch not being on the Supreme Court are better than the odds Trump had to win the presidency.
Far better. Yes.
So
far better.
Okay. Anything else on this?
No, I need to go to bed.
Okay, Yvonne, go to bed. And as usual, thank you to all our listeners. Comment on Facebook. Like us on Facebook. Share with your friends. If you want to contribute on Patreon, find us on Patreon as well. Patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. And on Facebook, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. No apostrophe, no space, etc. We love to hear from all you guys. And again, thanks for Bruce and Ed the last couple weeks for filling in.
Thank you.
Much appreciated. And hey, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.